my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Scentmas! This is Santa Claus wishing all the listeners of my 1-2-3 cents the podcast a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Now, get ready for Kevin Huntsberger and my 1-2-3 cents. Ho, ho, ho! Hey, Santa Claus, thank you for that warm welcome. And everyone, Merry Christmas. Thanks for listening. This is episode 162 of my 1-2-3 cents the podcast. And I'm doing things a little different this week and kind of turning back the hands of time because next week, Chad and I are going to be doing the Cinti Awards together. We have been doing the Cinti since My 1-2-3 Cents, the blog was a thing, my123cents.com, of course. You can also check out past Cintis, and of course, this upcoming Cintis will be dropping as well next week, January 1st, the first day of a new year. We're going to recap 2017. Also today, because of that, I decided I'm going to kind of turn back the hands of time and review 1984. And there are some significant reasons why I'm doing that. I'm looking at the Pro Wrestling Illustrated because back in the day when I was a kid, Pro Wrestling Illustrated was the end-all be-all for me as a young wrestling fan. The very first year that I started watching wrestling, actually, and I'll kind of tie Christmas into this podcast. And speaking of Christmas, the Ugly Christmas Suit campaign is still going on. I know I've talked about it a few times here. Jeff Holtke won the ornaments, the Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin ornaments. Thank you to everyone who did make a donation, and we're continuing this until we hit $7,500. And as I record this just 4 days before Christmas, we're still not there. So if you have it in your heart to give, go to uglychristmassuitguy.com and make your donation there, and it will be greatly appreciated. I'm recording this still in the suit, and we'll be wearing the suit until, like I said, we reach that $7,500 goal. Now, back to kind of the wrestling slash Christmas theme here that is going on. Probably one of the very first moments in wrestling, my dad, my brother, and my uncle who lived with us when we were kids were big wrestling fans, and I was not. My dad, brother, and uncle would go to the Kiel Auditorium or to the Checker Dome and go watch. Usually it was NWA when NWA was in town. Harley Race, Bruiser Brody, they saw Andre the Giant. I'm jealous now that I did not go back in those days, but they would go and, you know, see Ric Flair, Ted DiBiase before he was the Million Dollar Man. And I never went. I never went. My mom and I would always go do something. Well, then something happened, and I saw wrestling, and one of the first significant moments for me was around Christmas time in 1982, and I'm guessing I had to have seen it in syndication somewhere along the way, because it was the steel cage match between Ric Flair and Kerry Von Erich on World Class Championship Wrestling. Michael Hayes was the special guest referee. It was Christmas night, 1982. The Freebirds were good guys at the time. They'd come to Dallas, and they were working as good guys. And Terry Gordy was outside the cage. Hayes was trying to help Kerry Von Erich win. Kerry didn't want to cheat and win the championship that way. And there was a bit of a push and shove and words exchanged. Terry Gordy slams the cage door in Kerry's face, and Flair ends up winning. That launched one of, in my 1-2-3 cents, one of the greatest rivalries and feuds in wrestling history. And to me, today, it still holds up. In those early days, for me, World Class was all the way. And then I evolved and kind of started watching and coming across wrestling on the USA Network, syndication, KPLR, Wrestling at the Chase, WWF Superstars, Georgia Championship Wrestling, and then Central States, UWF, Saturday night, you know, the NWA World Championship Wrestling was on. So that's kind of my history in it. And I go to 1984 because that's the first year that I was fully vested in wrestling from calendar January 1 all the way through. Because I started, like I said, it was Christmas 82, and then I watched sporadically in 83. There were some other significant moments along the way. But then 84, I was all in. The birth of Hulkamania, Kerry Von Erich winning the NWA World Championship, the war to settle the score, all that stuff kind of leading up to WrestleMania in 1985. And it was either the war to settle the score or the brawl to settle it all. I don't remember which came first. I think it was the brawl to settle it all. That was in late 84, and then that took us into 85, I think. I'm remembering that correctly. But I started buying the After Mags, and every year in December, they would release the year in review. And I remember going to my first WWF live show, and this was part of my Christmas present in 1984. This was at the, it was not the Kiel, and now I'm drawing a blank as to where it was, but the significance is it was my first live event. It was WWF, and the main event was Hulk Hogan versus Brutus Beefcake. This is, of course, long before Beefcake was the barber, and he and Hogan were friends. On that card also, the likes of Rowdy Roddy Piper, Tito Santana. We saw Jimmy Superfly, Jimmy Snuka, the Junkyard Dog, Cowboy Bob Orton, the Briscoe Brothers. Not the ones that you see on Ring of Honor, but Jack and Jerry Briscoe. Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch were the tag team champions. S.T. Jones was there. Also got to see the Spoiler. So that was my first experience going to a WWF event. And it was so amazing because we were on the ground. We were on the floor, or not on the ground. We were on the floor level. So we were close to the ring, close enough that we could get up before and after each match and try to shake hands or clap hands, touch, reach out to the wrestlers as they walked by. And that was such an amazing experience because when you're a kid and you're watching it on TV, it's like, yeah, these guys are pretty big and significant guys. And, you know, but then when you're like right there, I mean, they're huge. It's enormous. And, it really was such a great night, and I would not soon forget it. But I do remember because I had that After magazine. This was on, I think I said it already, this was 2 days after Christmas. It was, I was, 11 years old, 12 years old, 11 years old at the time, in sixth grade, and I finally found it. It was Rowdy Roddy Piper and Junkyard Dog and Lou Thesz. I forgot about this. Lou Thesz was the special guest referee. Now, this was at the arena in St. Louis. I don't know. Some of you may be familiar with that. Snuka and Bob Orton. And, of course, I mentioned Dick Murdoch and Adrian Adonis were the tag team champions. This was right before they lost the belts to Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda. But lots of fun that night. And then that parlayed itself into when NWA would come into St. Louis. Saw Ric Flair and Kerry Von Erich go at it in 85, as well as Bruiser Brody and Ric Flair. And then there were some other shows along the way when WWF would come back into town that we would make it to as well. So I always kind of tie that, you know, Christmas spirit into that. And then, of course, as a kid, you know, around this same time period, and even a little older, actually, this was a couple years later because the LJN figures didn't come out until the summer of 85, but getting those LJN figures a few at a time every year at Christmas as well was always exciting to me because I was such a huge collector of those. Because back in the day when I first started watching wrestling, there were no action figures. And so what I would do is take my Star Wars figures and play with them and not quite the same, but you know, each character would be assigned a wrestler. Chewbacca, for example, was Andre the Giant. But anyway, that was kind of the fun of that. And I had that After magazine with me, like I said, that year in review, Pro Wrestling Illustrated Awards, PWI Awards magazine with me in hopes of getting it signed by some of the WWF superstars who were there that night. But like I said, we were close to the action, but not that close to where we were able to get those things signed. So for me, like I said, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated was the end-all be-all. And of course, I also I subscribed to that one after a while. We used to go up, there was a little corner store. We called it the drug store. And it was they had, you know, some food and just kind of, you know, there was a pharmacy up there and the magazine rack. And I would always grab my Pro Wrestling Illustrated from there. And then usually I would also get the Wrestler and Inside Wrestling. And after a while, I ended up subscribing to Pro Wrestling Illustrated and getting it in the mail. And I actually still have all of my wrestling magazines, much to the chagrin of my wife, but they're out in a tub in my garage. But I've digressed long enough. Let's talk about the year of 1984 and some very interesting, or at least from my perspective, some very interesting things happening with that year in review. Those awards. And I think someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive that the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Awards are straight up fan vote. I mean, they don't manipulate the vote at all. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it's on the up and up. But in 1984, the Inspirational Wrestler of the Year went to Sergeant Slaughter, who, of course, was, you know, fighting for America. This was right before WWF completely took the world by storm, or right around that time. He was feuding with Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff. And, you know, he was America's hero and a real American hero, and obviously a very well-deserved placement there. Now, Kerry Von Erich was the first runner-up, and his brother Kevin, second runner-up, and former WWF champion Bob Backlund was the third runner-up. That's what I liked about the Aftermag, or about the Year in Review Awards as well, as they had the first, second, and third runner up as well. So most improved was Billy Jack Haynes that year. And Billy, this was before Billy Jack came to WWF, and he was still, I think he was bouncing around the Portland area, and he was also working in World Class. I remember he and Kerry Von Erich teamed up a few times, and Billy Jack Haynes was an interesting case, though, because I felt like he had a ton of potential and a ton of, you know, going places, but he really kind of faded out after his run in the WWF, battling Hercules at WrestleMania 3, and then at least nationally, I know he wrestled as Black Blood in WCW for a little bit under a hood, but you didn't really hear or see much about him or from him after those days early on. The next award that was given on into Pro Wrestling Illustrated by the readers, Most Hated Wrestler of the Year. This one was pretty easy, I think, for the fans to pick, and that was Rowdy Roddy Piper. And such a great bad guy. You know, back in those days, the early to mid-80s, Ric Flair was obviously the NWA's bad guy, and WWF, it was Hot Rod. You know, he won the award back-to-back years, 84, 85. Then in 86, he actually was voted most popular. But man, I miss those days of wrestling, but I miss those days also of, you know, Hot Rod just being a badass. And I was a Hulkamaniac as a kid. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I was a Piper mark, but I liked Piper, but I loved Hulk Hogan, if that makes sense. And, you know, as I got older and became more appreciative of the business and the contributions that the men and women make to it, you know, it was hands down, it was easy to see that, you know, Piper without that perfect foil for Hogan, who was the ultimate good guy, you know, without that heel, you know, right there to get up in his business, you can't be that successful. It was kind of like the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, as I mentioned earlier. You know, Hogan Piper, that rivalry, one of my favorites too of all time. So, and I don't know that anybody else could have pulled it off the way Hot Rod did. So, you know, 1984, 1985, he was voted most hated. Most popular on the flip side of the coin was Kerry Von Erich. And this is where I find things to be kind of interesting, because I knew Kerry Von Erich was my favorite as a kid. And I know, you know, now as an adult, reading and seeing and even the way he died, he obviously had his demons. And, you know, I still stand by my fandom of him as a kid, you know, looking up to him and wanting to be him. I mean, I really wanted to be Kerry Von Erich. He was, to me, you know, bigger than Hulk Hogan. And in 1984, apparently the readers of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, he was as well, because Hulk Hogan was the first runner-up, Dusty Rhodes second, and Sergeant Slaughter was third. And I find that significant because Kerry Von Erich and Hulk Hogan both won the world championships that year. Hogan won it in January against the Iron Sheik for the WWF. Von Erich wins it in May of 84 against Ric Flair, but only held it for 18 days. But his popularity was such that he stayed on the radar for an entire, you know, for that entire year. The buildup to him winning, him losing it back to Ric Flair in Japan, you know. And I've read rumors or seen, you know, reports, alleged reports that had Vince McMahon not been able to convince Hulk Hogan to come and kind of be the man, the face, if you will, for WWF in those early days, that Kerry Von Erich was under consideration. Obviously Von Erich did not have the charisma that Hulk Hogan had. You know, Hulk Hogan, I think, you know, you can argue back and forth with Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan, chicken, egg, who is responsible. I think they both are equal players in this, because one without the other, it wouldn't have been. And I do think that Hogan's charisma and tenacity and larger-than-life persona helped propel wrestling into a stratosphere that I don't know if anybody else could have pulled that off. But it would have been interesting to see maybe what would have happened had Hogan decided to stay with the AWA or just simply not been around to or available to go and work for Vince McMahon. So I'm just fascinated by the entire fact that, you know, it was in fact Kerry Von Erich winning most popular, and he and Ric Flair, that match in May of 84, won match of the year. And that, of course, I mentioned before, is when Kerry won the heavyweight championship from Ric Flair. Loved it. It set a record for that time in Texas for the Parade of Champions, of course. It was all in honor and in memory of David Von Erich, who had died earlier that year. And just kind of a significant part of my fandom as a in those early months as a wrestling fan. So a great one there. And, you know, I'm going to keep the Von Erich love going, because Kerry, Kevin, and Mike were first runner-up for Tag Team of the Year. Of course, the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, ended up picking up that honor. They actually won it 3 years in a row, winning it in 83, 84, and 85. And the Road Warriors, I think, have to be the most dominant tag team in the history of the business, right? I mean, I'm not saying they were the best, but I would like to think they were the most dominant. I believe the record still stands. The only tag team to hold the AWA, WWF, and WCW World Heavyweight Championships or Tag Team Championships. I don't think, I'm trying to think back now that I've said that. The Nasty Boys were in the AWA for a little bit, but I don't think they were ever the tag team champions there. But, you know, Hawk and Animal, so dominant. And the funny thing about the Road Warriors, I thought, was who they would always end up losing the tag team championships to. And, you know, it's funny because I kind of had this discussion the other day with a friend about, you know, the big dominating presence in the ring versus the not so intimidating. And, you know, if you look back, the Road Warriors, you know, you would expect them to lose the tag team titles to, say, the Powers of Pain or Demolition. You know, those teams that were bigger and maybe not bigger, but just as big, just as intimidating, just as strong. But look back in the AWA when they lost the tag team championships, it was to Steve Regal, Lord Steven Regal, but Steve Regal, little blonde guy with a black beard, and gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, and Steve Regal beat the Road Warriors for the AWA Tag Team Championships. Of course, they had help from Michael Hayes and I think Terry Gordy. Then when they went on to WCW, they won the Tag Team Championships and ended up losing them to the Varsity Club, which I think, you know, Mike Rotunda and Dr. Death Steve Williams, a bit more of a significant force. And then in WWF, again, Mike Rotunda, kind of that foil for the Road Warriors, Legion of Doom at the time, as he and Ted DiBiase, as Money Incorporated, won. And you would think that the Road Warriors would come in there and just kind of kick the asses of a team like Ted. And I'm not disparaging Ted DiBiase or Mike Rotunda. I think they're both wonderful talents. But, you know, as a tag team, they were kind of a makeshift tag team put together. And then, of course, they win. And then later down the road, when the Warriors won the belts again in 1997, I guess it was, they lost the gold to the New Age Outlaws, another makeshift tag team of Billy Gunn and the Road Dog, the Roadie, for crying out loud. I would have never thought the Roadie and Billy Gunn would have such a significant mark in the world of professional wrestling, but they certainly did, and well deserved too. I'm not knocking them either by any means, but, you know, at the time in 97, when I saw the Road Warriors or the Legion of Doom drop the tag team titles to those two, I was like, this has got to be a joke. But, you know, obviously it wasn't, and you know, but the Road Warriors, I think, still, and they were never my favorite tag team. I liked the Road Warriors, but I was always a WWF loyalist. I, of course, watched all wrestling. I say that all the time. But, you know, in those early days for tag teams, the British Bulldogs are probably still my all-time favorite tag team. Favorite. You know, there's a big difference when fans kind of debate and go back and forth. Favorite versus best. You know, I know the British Bulldogs were not the best tag team, but they were my favorite for sure. I would throw Edge and Christian, the Midnight Express, you know, just off the top of my head, a couple of the other significant tag teams that I enjoyed watching as a fan. But in those early days, I would have loved a Road Warriors versus British Bulldogs matchup. And unfortunately, we never got it, or at least I don't think we ever did. Wrestler of the Year, you know, no surprise here. The Nature Boy Ric Flair wins that. He had won it in 81 for the first time, and then 84 and 85 and 86, winning it again in 89, 92, when he, of course, won the WWF championship. And I believe 92 was the last year that he won it. But, you know, Ric Flair, I've said it before, my all-time favorite, just such an awesome performer. And you know, like I said, he's my favorite. I think he's the best. Others will argue Shawn Michaels is. Shawn Michaels is great too. But there's just something about Flair that has always stuck out to me. You know, six times Wrestler of the Year, which is interesting to me as well, because you had Hulk Hogan, who was, you know, the WWF champion. He was the first runner-up, by the way, in 1984 with Wrestler of the Year. And I don't have the page pulled up with the breakdown of the votes, but it's interesting because you talk about most popular, and, you know, WWF obviously was gaining a lot of momentum and getting that worldwide recognition. But I think wrestling fans, you know, still respected and loved the contributions that Ric Flair was making. Even though they may have been a Hulkamaniac, they may have acknowledged that that Flair was, in fact, the man. And, you know, he was, interestingly enough, not even in the top of the most hated category that year in 84. It was actually, you know, like I said, Piper won it, and then Kevin Sullivan, Tully Blanchard, and the Iron Sheik were the top three vote getters after Piper won it. So I think people had an admiration and a respect for Flair that just could not be ignored. So I don't know. I hope you enjoyed this little stroll down memory lane. You know, it was, I was kind of racking my brain trying to come up with ways to talk or things to talk about for the Christmas episode. I'm bummed with myself. I really did try getting Mick Foley booked for another interview. Mick Foley has been on before, but I was trying to get him to come on and talk about his book. I do have that. Chad got me a copy of that, an autographed copy of that, no less. So I'm enjoying that. But I wanted to have kind of a Christmas theme here, and I thought back into my childhood and what made me happy as a kid around Christmas time with wrestling, and kind of tied in the year 1984 with it. So that is the reasoning behind it. And of course, there are other significant Christmas-themed events. You know, WWF did stuff all throughout. Starcade, you know, you would have Survivor Series that year. Santa Claus came out and raised Bret Hart's hand after he beat Shawn Michaels in 1992. I believe Santa came out at Starcade once it moved to December. There was Santa Claus, who was Balls Mahoney. The Christmas Creature, who is actually Kane, that was in USWA. Don't know a whole lot about him, but I do find that one to be a fascinating and interesting character too. But you know, WWE, by the way, if you're listening to this on Christmas Day, tonight, on Christmas night, going live with Raw for the first time on Christmas, I think ever, in the 25-year history of Raw. And some people have argued and complained about that, and I get it. But in the entertainment industry, you know, movie theaters are open on Christmas for a reason. It's a big night. And, you know, back in the day, way back when, you know, 84, when I was just talking about, those were Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's Day, New Year's night were huge nights for the business. You know, you spend the day with the family, and then it's time to get out and enjoy some wrestling. And I know, had there been that opportunity when I was a kid, had WWF or NWA for that matter, or any company been in the St. Louis area on Christmas night, I know that we would have gone. Like I said, we went 2 days later on the 27th. So WWF was touring, but I think they didn't do a whole lot of Christmas Day events, not like, you know, NWA was doing back then. But it'll be interesting to see how Raw, what the viewership is like, will people watch? Because, you know, also back in the day, you didn't have smartphones and podcasts and YouTube and everything else to kind of distract you and take you away from the family. So will folks in their celebrations and turn on Raw, or will they DVR it? I will probably be DVRing it, because I will be one of the very only wrestling fans at my family Christmas celebration, but that's okay. So again, I hope you have had a great Christmas. To our Jewish listeners, Hanukkah season, whatever you are celebrating this time of year, I hope it has been fantastic. Happy New Year as well. We'll be back in 2018. Chad and I will kick off New Year's Day with the Senti Awards, and be sure to check that out also over at Facebook. I'm sorry. Well, yeah, Facebook.com/my123cents, but also over at my123cents.com. Everyone, thank you so much for the support through the years. 2017 was great. 2018, though, is going to be even better. I know it. So, again, thank you, everyone. Merry Christmas, and have a great rest of the week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.